Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another D Word Podcast. Over the years, we've had a variety of guests on the show, but on this edition, I'm delighted to introduce something original. Jan B. Brown is a dementia-inclusive storyteller and shanty woman. Jan, great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Dementia-inclusive storyteller and shanty woman. Now, I've got to start by saying we've done over 320 shows and we have never had a dementia-inclusive storyteller and shanty woman. You are the very first. So really looking forward to finding out all about it. I mean, what's your connection with all this? How did it all start?
Well, it started on a ship, strangely enough. Certainly the shanty singing did. I was sailing on a tall ship with the Jubilee Sailing Trust, who sadly are no longer with us since COVID. But I was buddying, another member of the crew. But in fact, I think she was teaching me how to sail. And we got to Norway, we got to Bergen, and I hired a most fantastic shanty band on the pier. And I just went, I have to sing sea shanties. I mean, I was already a storyteller. In fact, I was telling tales on 10 tall ships to get me on that trip. And I did, in fact, tell stories on 10 tall ships in that very port the very next day. So, I was then living on Shetland and another adventure after COVID, and decided that actually sea shanties would be a good idea to trial as a dementia inclusive event. And so I set up the Shalda Shanty Crew. Now, Shalda is an oyster catcher. Shetland has many words. It has its own language, but it has many words for different words for birds and other things. And so, yes, the oyster catchers are Shalders. So the Shalder Shanty Crew was formed with a little help from Luminate, which is a creative aging charity up here in Scotland. And yes, it's still going. It's been going for four years now. And in fact, we sang for the tall ships race in 2019, I think it was. So, yeah, it was such a great trip. It was a great experience. And with the call and response of a sea shanty, you don't need to learn the words. And people say, oh, I can't sing. You know, I used to be able to sing when I was younger. Or a lot of people say, I was told not to sing by my music teacher. But anybody can belt out a sea shanty. So, yes, that's how it all started. The storytelling, well, that's another story.
Okay. I was one of those who was told that by my music teacher. So, maybe I have to go into sea shanties, I don't know. But in terms of the dementia link, obviously up in Shetland, fairly remote area. And in terms of people living with dementia, what are the particular challenges, you know, in that part of the world?
Well, the particular challenge is it's quite a long way to get anywhere. I mean, I hadn't realised it was a 17-hour ferry journey before I moved there from Aberdeen. But when you're there, of course, the people are strung out in rural areas. Unst, the island of Unst, the most northerly island, and Yell. And so actually getting to socialise was a challenge, you know, in terms of, well, getting to Lerwick, to the main centre. I was lucky enough when I was working for Alzheimer's Scotland to be able to go up and visit Ull and Yell. But that's problematic. I couldn't do that every week. Now, Shetland, of course, is blessed with its community halls, which were funded, a lot of them were funded by the oil money back in the day. And so socialization certainly goes on, and it is a very dementia inclusive community. And it was part of my bag there to encourage that, to do a lot of dementia awareness training. But I learned more about community in Shetland than I had in all my years before. It is quite extraordinary, the power of community. And yeah, came back with my cup full.
And I guess, is it the power of understanding in terms of things like dementia? Is it in some way easier in an inclusive society like you've got in Shetland than it is in a more diverse place?
Well, that's an interesting one. I'm currently working at a meeting centre in Edinburgh, in North Edinburgh. So we're urban. And one can be more isolated in a city than living on an island, a remote island. Certainly access to diagnosis, I think, was probably quicker on the islands. I'm not sure the current climate. I've been back for 2 years now, but yeah, there's a real need for connection in our urban settings.
Absolutely. And I guess that connection, looking at the other part of your work is storytelling. That is all about producing that connection.
Very much so. So I was trained, or I was an apprentice at the Scottish School of Storytelling, or the Scottish Storytelling Forum. And the Scottish tradition is very much a ceilidh tradition. That doesn't mean you have to dance up and down the hall. The ceilidh tradition is eye to eye, mind to mind, and heart to heart. So very much not the great performance, someone standing on a stage at a festival declaiming or sharing stories, but very much to sit in a smaller venue, to eye to eye, to know potentially the people you're telling your stories to. And well, yeah, of course, one always tells a story from the heart. That doesn't matter where you are for that. So mind to mind, again, engaging, reading the room is very, very important as a storyteller. And it is about, again, a communication. And yeah, I was telling some stories yesterday at the Brew and Blether session at the Capitol Theatres. They hold one once a month for people living with dementia. And it was such a delight to not only share some sea shanties and some stories, but also to do an activity as well, and share some intangible cultural heritage, which is a very long way of talking about May Day traditions on Arctic whaling ships, which sailed from Scottish ports. So very niche, but do you know, everybody seemed to appreciate it.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast with my guest Jan B. Brown. Yeah, I do. Yeah, very niche, as you say, but always interesting those things. I mean, that brings me on to the. If someone says you're a storyteller, someone I say to someone, oh, I'm speaking to Jan today. She's a storyteller, and the first thing they'll ask me is, well, what kind of stories are we talking about?
Ah, yes. Well, very, very true. Certainly, when I was doing my apprenticeship, you're asked to stand in the storytelling stream. So to listen to a lot of storytellers, traditional tales, or indeed life stories, and to experience storytelling with children and in schools and in libraries and in care homes as well, or residential homes. And I think I learned to be a better storyteller when I walked into a job in a residential care home during COVID. Because during COVID, for storytellers, all of our venues shut, the libraries, the schools, the kindergartens. And yes, so I bubbled basically with a care home where I was part of the social and leisure team, together with another storyteller, Francisca Droll. She's good too. And yes, in full PPE, we told stories and we sang sea shanties. And do you know, it was such a safe space. It was such a troubled time and a time of such fear. But do you know, it made us better storytellers. And that is because we saw the power that a story can have to, yeah, bring about change or to just make someone feel happy. So a lot of people, when I sit on a train and someone says, "What do you do?" I say, "Well, I'm a storyteller." So they ask, "Tell me a story." Which story? There are hundreds. I obviously like stories of the sea, but I like stories of resilience. And of course, so many stories from the sea are about shipwrecks or near misses or missing home or exploring. That's a great place for me to find stories. But recently, I was on an amazing storytelling course down in Perodur near Emerson in East Grinstead. And it was called Tales for Troubled Times. And it was a pilot, really. We were the first cohort to really look at stories as a way to heal troubled times or to encourage people to discuss the issues involved. And there was a story that I heard there, which was, well, it just hit the mark with me. And I wonder if I could share it. It's just a short one.
Absolutely.
So I was going down there for my own CPD. I'd been working in this area of work for 8 years, as well as caring for my mum, who was living with dementia at the end of her life. And I realized I hadn't had any CPD. I had not had any continuing professional development. I hadn't even had any supervision in that 8 years. And I was maybe starting to feel like I was hitting a wall. And so I went down and someone told me the story and it changed my life. So here it is. A man walks down to a beach and sits on the sand. Oh, enjoying the sunshine or reflecting on the water. But out of the corner of his eye, he sees a figure. It seems to be running up and down between the water's edge and somewhere on the beach, all along the beach. So curious, the man decides to go and investigate and soon sees that it's a young girl. A young girl who is picking something off the sand and running down to the water's edge and throwing it into the sea. And then he looks at his own feet and he sees that actually the beach is covered in starfish that have been washed up by a freak tide. And well, he sees that the beach is miles long and this one lassie is just throwing one by one as many as she can into the sea. And he calls out, "Child, what are you doing? You can't make a difference. The beach is miles long and there are thousands and thousands of starfish." Well, the girl doesn't stop in her quest. She reaches down, picks up another starfish, runs to the water's edge, and throws it in. And as she does so, she says, "I think I made a difference to that one." And in my story, the man bends down, picks up a starfish, walks to the water's edge, and throws it in, and hopefully continues to do so.
Well, I think do people kind of undervalue the, the real power of things like that? And I guess in what you were saying there's a bit of storytelling in all of us, but we don't quite know how to bring it out.
Oh, yes. I mean, I have to say. It's a, you know, I don't say this aloud, of course, and I certainly don't say it when it's being broadcast. But you know, stories can be wasted on children or lost on children. Yes, there. Everybody craves stories. Everybody makes their own stories, as in we're all in charge of our narrative. When I say in charge of our narrative, obviously there are factors that bite us in the bum. If you don't excuse my expression, you know, diagnosis aside, lots of things challenge us daily. And yeah, we can't necessarily control them, but we can control how we react to them, or we can try to. And so that's where the, I guess, the narrative can change. And we can look at something from a different point of view. So recently I was, well, just, yes, on Sunday, I was performing Raven's Tales, which is an event that I co-produced with a musician called Toby Hawkes, with the thanks to the Scottish Storytelling Centre's festival, which in 24, we developed it for them, but we've been touring it around meeting centres in Scotland. And it is a dementia inclusive event. And the stories are written by myself with the idea that the hero or the heroine is potentially living with a diagnosis. I went to see a colleague do a performance of a storytelling performance of Don Quixote. And they had a classical guitarist, and it was a wonderful event. And I suggested that some of my meeting centre members went along, and they were doing some fringe reviewing that year. Not just the venue as to whether that was inclusive and the, you know, they could access it, but actually could they access the story or the plot? And they came back, and I said, "Oh, did you enjoy the show?" Because I had loved it. They said, "Well, we really appreciated it. But you know, there was something that we'd just like to feed back, which is if we have music and story in a show, if they are layered, interwoven, sometimes it's really difficult to focus on the words in terms of processing time with the music as well, even though we like both." So Raven's Tales grew out of that feedback. So I have a wonderful musician, Toby Hawkes, with me, who plays a variety of Nordic instruments, and the stories are from Finland and Norway and Iceland. So, yeah, we have, I suppose, adapted it, or we have created it so that there is music, there is story, there is song, but that enables processing time. We also have an interval with buns, which is absolutely necessary, tea and buns, because that's where we can be social and we can actually get to know people and hear their feedback. So yes, I think stories can be accessible, but there are ways that work. But sorry, just to go back to Don Quixote, when I was watching that show for the first time, that event, I sat there going, I think Don Quixote had dementia with Lewy bodies. There's a lot of hallucinations going on, and it's very interesting to see how he is treated by the villagers. So it's just something to, if you fancy reading Don Quixote, maybe go back to it. But it did lead me to think, how many of the heroes in the tales that are told or myths might have been, neurodivergent or potentially living with dementia.
I think you've hit a little gold mine there, haven't you? Really, but I get, that's a brilliant example of how a story makes you think outside the box, if you like, and you kind of think around it. And the other thing I think is really important is what you described as dementia inclusive performance. A lot of people think, well, we won't have any flashing lights and the music won't be too loud. But don't take on board the kind of feedback that you did and produce something that is truly inclusive.
Yes, I mean, I hope that I can share this more widely. I recently did a workshop on creative approaches to dementia inclusive storytelling at the Scottish Storytelling Forum, and it was really well attended. And the sharing in that room was amazing. There were care partners there were carers there, and there were people living with dementia there, and a lot of storytellers too. And I just thought, oh, there's a movement here. We're starting a movement.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
All our shows on UK Health Radio are available for listen again and download. All you have to do is go to the website ukhealthradio.com. On this edition of the D Word podcast, my guest is Jambi Brown.
I've got to say, for an Englishman who's living down south, I'm assuming it isn't just a Scottish preserve, and there's a lot of story tale. But I guess you've got the heritage and the sea and everything that goes with it up there. So do we need to catch up in England?
Well, there are some very fine storytellers in England, and Martin Shore is a storyteller who's got quite a few stories online that I can recommend. He has a podcast as well, and oh, there are wonderful storytelling festivals, and of course you have the School of Storytelling down at Peredur, East Grinstead. So we might not be handy for East Grinstead. It's quite tricky to get to, especially on a Sunday. But yeah, there are fantastic storytellers there. There are also storytellers, well, storytelling circles, which are worth finding, trying to find out if your local town has one. But online, there's Settle Stories. And there's also, oh, where else is the Settle Stories? I'll have to think, maybe give you some links. But certainly Google storytelling locally, and you will find a storyteller.
I guess the other thing I've got to ask is kind of a tune to have a lot of people that deal with music and dementia and the power of music. And also, one of my big things is how that music moves on with age ranges. And for example, people that are considered to, if they've got Alzheimer's or dementia, the first thought is, well, they must be old. And if they are old, then they must like to sing these old songs, which is so far from the truth. It's untrue. And I was just wondering, to equate it with storytelling, do the stories move forward the way music does?
Oh, that is a good question. Yes. I think our personal response to stories will always be current or concurrent. I agree with you that there is a tension sometimes between what is played in various settings for people living with dementia and their personal choice. Playlist for Life is addressing that. And of course, that was Sally Magnusson, that's her charity, and identifying that we all have playlists in our lives and how powerful they can be. So I won't dwell on that, but yes, I have a member of the meeting centre where I work who has always drew all his life. That was his hobby, his passion. And on diagnosis, he stopped drawing. And it was listening to The Doors and heavy metal, all sorts of the Stones. It was listening to them that actually brought that passion back, enabled him to continue drawing. And he's about to have a one-man show of his portraits in Edinburgh soon. So that's the power of it. Storytelling wise, I was, so for example, in Raven's Tales, I was riffing on Odin's ravens, Hugin and Munin, thought and memory, and that he worried about Hugin going missing, but he worried about Munin, his memory, missing more. But I was looking at the Kalevala, at one of the stories of Lemminkainen's mother, and then I was looking at a Shetland folk tale. So they were very, very old stories. But of course, everybody's going to listen to them and have different pictures in their mind. So certainly, Odin and his wife were a couple of mature years living in a tower overlooking a bridge. Could be today, could have been in the Nordic yonder.
And I get, going back to the starfish story, that's kind of that's timeless. Like, that could be happening anywhere at any time, couldn't it?
Well, I think they say that there are only seven stories in the world. You know, there's only sort of seven story plots. You know, girl meets boy.
But I guess that that brings out what you've been saying about people's differing reaction to the they've got seven plots, but everybody in the world probably reacts a different way to each of those seven.
Absolutely. And of course, there have been feminist rewritings of the fairy tales of the Cinderella, and I often do that. And there are stories that are problematic. Here in Scotland, we have a Selkie myth where, under the moonlight, the seals will shed their skin and dance on the sand, usually female seals. But there we go. And of course, if a fisherman is watching and takes a skin, then well, that Selkie can't return to the water. Well, that seal cannot return to the water. And usually that Selkie goes home and becomes a wife and a mother, and the seal skin is hidden. But of course, playing hide and seek, one of the bairns, one of the children, finds the skin and says, "Mother, what's this?" And she's off. She's back in the sea. She's gone. And that's quite problematic in this hashtag Me Too world. You know, it's coercive control. There's all sorts of things going on there which we shouldn't be enjoying in a story. So yeah, there's lots to unpick. Let's just say that.
It's an interesting concept, really, isn't it? That putting today's views and values on stories that were written many hundreds of years ago, or whatever, and hopefully we don't have these stories reflect the kind of an announcement at the beginning. I want to move on to something else, which I know you've been involved in as well, which is social prescribing. Which is something that we have followed quite a lot and think there's a real power behind it. But I still think, in terms of creative arts, it's kind of misunderstood.
Oh, yes. Well, when I have I been involved in social prescribing? I have to, well, I suppose on both sides, both as a storyteller and as a manager of a meeting centre that is very keen to get good quality creative input from outsiders. There's a friction, or there's a challenge between what is art therapy and what is therapeutic arts. And I think that distinction is important. It's quite frustrating when you spent a lot of money and a lot of time becoming a therapist in the arts, and then people are expecting you to work for very little or for free. So yes, that is problematic potentially. Expecting a creative result, I think, is very often in the arts, it is what we're producing that is going to be exhibited, or, there's a pressure to actually create something that will be exhibited or shared, even on social media. And actually, it's about the process. That's the important bit, that people are encouraged, able, able to just see how the arts can make them feel better. And I think that is an interesting one about social prescription. I think also for me, it is the lack of awareness or knowledge in the medical, what would you call it, arena, about the power of creativity, but also the cost. And so people regard storytelling as a hobby. They potentially regard the volunteers bringing their skills in their different art practices, as a blessing, but oh, isn't it wonderful that they're sharing this for free? And no, funding is needed, and people need to be respected for their time and their facilitation. So, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, and I guess there's no percentage way of measuring it or boxes that can be ticked in that respect. Even when I was running activity groups, people were living in dementia in the community for 2 years. We were always asked, "Well, how do you know you're doing a good job?" And I say, "Well, people will walk in and they haven't got a smile on their face. They walk out and they've got a smile on their face. But if you want to put that on the balance sheet, I've got absolutely no idea how to do it."
Oh, I've got to get on my soapbox. No, I can't get on my soapbox here. I can't. But I tell you, evaluation has been a hot discussion topic, certainly amongst my volunteers and my members of the meeting centre at the heart of New Haven. Especially if you have a project which maybe is funded by National Lottery, God bless them. Thank you for the money. But the evaluation required, the ethics of evaluation, asking people to sort of remember how they felt at the beginning of the session, how they felt at the middle of the session, how they felt at the end of the session, how they felt weeks after, is a nonsense for anybody, let alone people living with dementia or in schools. So yes, this insistence on quantitative data is extraordinary. Or even asking for quotes, even taking photos. It's not ethical.
That absolutely. I think, well, we're fastly running out of time, but I think that's a subject for another long conversation.
Well, it's a
Because you're
subject for
not,
a PhD.
well, yeah, but you're not the only person I've spoken to who's come up with that exact point, And I think when you said a little bit earlier in this conversation about starting a movement, well, I think that's one that definitely needs getting off the launch pad. But anyway, this has been a real pleasure. And I want to get you back on the show to talk some more. I've learned a lot about the power of storytelling, and I'd urge all the listeners to look at those links. And if you forward them to me, I'll put them out on social media so people can have a look. And for now, anyway, Jan, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Well, thank you. See you soon.
Thanks to Jan for introducing a really fascinating area. And you'll find out more from her website, janbee.brown.co.uk. Well, that's all for this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.